Gordon was at his usual station on the battlements of the fort. He was standing behind his telescope, peering downriver towards the Shabluka Gorge. Two brilliant coloured flags flew from the flagstaff of the watchtower. The red, white and black of Egypt were surmounted by the red, white and blue of the Union flag of Great Britain. Gordon straightened up and saw Ryder's upturned face. "Those flags will be the first thing that the relief force sees when they come up the river. They will know that the city is still in our hands, and that we have withstood all the forces of evil and darkness. And all the world will learn, General, that one Englishman alone, and almost unaided, has been able to achieve. It is a story that will be written large in the annals of empire." Ryder had meant it to be ironic, but somehow it did not come out that way. He was forced to admit, however reluctantly, that he admired this terrible little man. He could never feel the slightest affection for him, but he stood in awe of him. Gordon raised a silver-grey eyebrow, beneath which a cold blue eye glinted, acknowledging the barbed compliment from an adversary. "I am informed that you took your steamer out on trial last night, and that it was successful," he stated crisply. Ryder nodded cautiously. "The old devil misses nothing," he thought. Now he found himself hating the man as strongly as ever. "I hope that does not mean you are planning to sail away in her before the relief arrives?" Gordon asked. "The thought had crossed my mind. Mr. Courtney, despite your mercenary instincts, you have made, perhaps unwittingly, a significant contribution to the defence of my city. Your production of the foul-tasting but nutritious green cake in itself has been of great assistance. You have other resources at your disposal that might save lives." Gordon stared at him. Ryder stared back into the sapphire eyes and replied, "Indeed, General, and I feel I have done as much as I can. However, I have a premonition that you will try to convince me otherwise. I need you to remain in the city. I do not want to be forced to impound your vessel, but I shall not hesitate to do so if you defy me." "Ah!" Ryder nodded. "That is a compelling argument. May I suggest a compromise, General?" "I am a reasonable man," Gordon inclined his head, "and I am always ready to listen to good sense." That is not a widely held opinion, Ryder thought, but he replied evenly, "If I am able to deliver equal value, will you allow me to sail from Khartoum whenever I wish, with the cargo and passengers of my own choice, without restriction?" "Ah, yes, I believe you have become friendly with David Benbrook's daughters," Gordon smiled bleakly, "and that you have several tons of ivory in your warehouse. Those would be your passengers and cargo, would they not?" "David Benbrook and the three young ladies will be among those I shall invite to sail with me. I am certain that this would not be in conflict with your sense of chivalry." "What do you offer, sir, as part of the bargain?" "A minimum of 10 tons of durra grain, enough to feed the populace until the arrival of the relief force and forestall any further rioting. You will pay me 12 shillings a sack in cash." Gordon's face darkened. "I have always suspected that you had a hidden hoard of grain." "I have no secret hoard, but I will risk my ship and my life to obtain it for you. In return, I want your word of honour as a gentleman and an officer of the Queen that on delivery to you of 10 tons of durra, you will pay me the agreed price and allow me to sail from Khartoum. I suggest that this is fair, and that you have nothing to lose by agreeing to it."